Chapter 16. Cecilia had retrieved the dragon's eggs, and shortly after, I'd gone up to carve out the core. The item was so much larger than any other I'd seen, and when I held it between both hands, I felt a rush of power so intense it nearly knocked me off my feet. We couldn't use it yet, but once we'd taken Tulna and forced it to submit to us, the city's aristocrats would be the first dragon women the world had ever seen. We had no time to pause or to celebrate our unexpected win against the dragon, and Askara and I once again climbed back into the digger. I felt like I was riding a high I'd never come down from, but that easily could have come from killing the dragon or the effects of the elemental core resting in the hall with us.
"Ready to start again, my lord?" Askara chuckled and shook his head. "I'll just say all of that uncertainty wasn't expected."
"I'm glad your senses picked up the danger," I said, and gripped the two levers in both hands. "Otherwise we would have rolled right into the dragon's range and, well, the two of us would have been baked sardines in here."
"Now what help would we be to the men of the world if we died like that?"
The guard laughed heartily, and before the sound died out, the digger slithered forward toward the far wall. Once we were within a few feet of it, I snapped down the buttons on top of the levers, and immediately the front digger began to spin. As we moved closer and closer, the pointed spiral turned so fast it was a blur in front of us. And before long, we entered back into the darkness. It wouldn't be long until we resurfaced on the other side of the fortification, and I angled the digger upward through the rock and sand. I moved us upward until the sensor on Askara's side started to blip, and a soft alarm sounded to let us know we were definitely underneath something. I kept my eyes ahead of me, but every few seconds I glanced over at the sensor in front of my guard to see if we'd finally moved out from underneath the wall.
"I can't believe you slew a fucking dragon," Askara whispered, and then let out a low chuckle. "I can't believe I'm sitting next to the man who slew a dragon. This is absolutely insane."
"Were you not this impressed with me before?" "I freed three cities so far, Askara. Was that not enough to make you respect me?"
"Oh, I respected you way before that, my lord," the soldier nodded. "But this, well, this is something truly unbelievable. But I can't even say that because I witnessed it with my own two eyes. My lord, I don't know how to explain it. It's like watching history unfold. I know it's happening right before me, but I almost can't believe it."
"We've lived in a world where men have been slaves for our entire lives," I uttered, and my guard instantly fell silent.
"And anything other than that reality seems like nothing more than a fairy tale, but I'm living it. Someday, when all of this is past, and Aliana and I have settled down, I'll tell our children about how I served beside the king. I was the king's right-hand man, and I watched as history was made right in front of me."
"No, no, no," I shook my head and laughed lightly. "You didn't watch as history was made. Askara, you're part of history being made. And when they write stories about this in history books, you'll be one of the main characters. After this battle, you will no longer be just a soldier, my friend."
"What you mean?" the guard asked, then chuckled lightly. "Are you firing me from my position? Let me go."
"No," I muttered, and then sat up a little straighter. "Because today you will be known as General Askara. You've proven yourself to me time and time again. You've shown me you are astute when it comes to battles and wars, and even in moments of anxiety, you still know what your duties are. That is why I want you to stand by my side and lead our armies to victory. Then, once all of this is over, you'll be named Duke, and you and your wife, along with your child, will receive a large sum of money and property inside of the capital."
"No." I could see it in your face. You're about to protest all of this, and I won't have it.
This isn't the official announcement of your promotion, but I wanted to tell you before I said it in front of everyone, and you vehemently denied it."
"I wouldn't deny it in front of the other soldiers," Askara laughed. "I probably would have taken you aside at a later time and told you I couldn't accept it."
"See, just as I suspected."
"Fine, I'll accept it, but only because I enjoyed this time we spend together, my lord. In the beginning, I saw you as our new leader, and only that. But as you took me under your wing and taught me more about the ways of war, I'd like to believe we developed a friendship."
"I think we have too," I nodded. "I'm glad to have you by my side, General Askara."
"Now, don't go calling me that."
The guard laughed and shook his head.
You'll do nothing but inflate my ego.
You're going to have to get used to it, I stated, glanced over at the sensor, and noticed it moved in big, slow arcs.
All right, it looks as if we're past the wall. It's time for us to surface and cause some carnage.
Do you remember the plan, General Ascara?
Yes, the older man nodded. We'll break through, and as soon as we're out, I'll exit the digger and join the men through the hatch up top. Then you and your women will carve the way through the city with the digger until you reach the Marchioness's manor.
Good, I murmured. Do you have your warhammers at the ready? You're going to need them as soon as we reach the surface.
Yes.
The dark-haired soldier nodded, reached on either side of his chest, and grabbed the two heavy weapons. Now, I grinned wickedly. Here we go. I gripped the levers a little tighter in my hands, and then angled them backward. Instantly, the digger responded to the direction and created a tunnel upward toward the surface. We'd break through it pretty soon, and then the fighting would begin. We had no way of knowing if they'd spotted the abandoned caravan by now and prepared for the attack, but I assumed the sand had already partially covered the first hole we'd created. A soft automated blip started up from the left of me, and that told me we were quickly approaching the surface. We were minutes away from our first attack. And then, while my soldiers handled the aristocrats, my women and I would head toward the Marchioness. I glanced toward the sensors in front of Ascara one last time, pressed my lips into a hard line, and then prepared to break through. The first part of the digger to surface was the spiral tip, and clods of dirt rained down on the double-paned window. Bricks and broken pavement flew into the air all around the digger, but that wasn't what caught my attention. There was another sound except for the loud crashes. It was so loud it even reached inside of the digger's hull. People were screaming. Something smattered against the small window. Ascara and I looked out of it, and it took me a moment to realize it was blood. The first death in this war against the oppression of the male sex. Buildings lined the busy street, and just as my machine exited the hole it created, my soldiers and monster women rushed out with their weapons raised. My eyes shifted to Ascara, and his lips were pressed into a firm line as his hands tightened around the hafts of his warhammers. He rose from his seat, opened the hatch over our heads, and then glanced down at me.
"Give 'em hell, my lord," the general uttered. "Show them the pain and suffering we've endured all of these years."
"You got it," I grinned. Without hesitation, Ascara pulled himself out of the hull, slammed the hatch down, and then jumped down to the broken street below. I glanced out of the small window for a moment as carnage broke out all around us. I finally settled my sights on a large manor in the distance, the biggest one out of them all, and then slammed the levers forward. The digger slithered down the street, and my hands instinctively pushed down the buttons on top. The pointed spiral immediately began to spin, and I guided the digger toward the rows of aristocrat houses and public buildings. I promised I'd destroy Tulna and leave nothing but destruction in my wake. And I'd do just that. I tore through houses as if I were ripping through flimsy paper, and though I couldn't see the damage behind me, I knew I'd cleared a path for my monster women to follow. My machine was built well enough to withstand the constant barrage of housing materials slamming against its sides, and every few seconds, I caught glances of the people inside the houses I destroyed. They obviously didn't know an attack was happening outside until a massive metal vehicle smashed through their living room wall. Finally, my machine rolled out onto the main brick-lined street, and I got the full frontal view of the Marchioness's grand manor. It reminded me of Edeny's old home with its massive columns and enormous windows, but there were a few slight differences. A massive wrought-iron fence surrounded the whole property, and soldiers raced around the lush lawn in preparation for the attack. They wouldn't stand a chance against my women or soldiers. It was clear to me by their stances and prepared weapons the Marchioness had no plans to come out and face us, but that was fine. We would bring the fight to her. As I slammed the levers back one notch and rocketed forward, the desperados appeared on either side of me. Matilda glanced toward the small window, grinned at me, and then gave me an enthusiastic thumbs up. The five women created an arrow shape in front of the digger and rode out in front of me with their hands held on either side of them. I wasn't sure how they could ride without holding the reins, but I assumed it had something to do with their mechanical horses. The green-haired desperado lifted her metal arm, took aim, and then blasted out the length of rope. The pointed end flew through the air, clanged around the iron gate, and then wrapped around it four times. Instantly, Matilda ripped back her metal arm, and the gate flew backward with an explosive clang. Then another sound caught my attention. It almost reminded me of a rabid dog, snarling and barking at some threat in the distance. But the noise was deeper and guttural, like a bear. When I glanced to the left, one of the desperados seemed to jerk and twitch uncontrollably, as if she were having a seizure. Suddenly, the woman threw back her head and screamed at the sky with her lips pulled down into a pained snarl. I recognized it was Maddie, but there was something horribly wrong with her. Her body was twisted, and her loose arms jerked at her sides for a long moment until she threw herself forward. For a second, I thought she'd be trampled by the heavy metal hooves of her mechanical horse. But then I realized she was running ahead of her horse on all fours. Her body had changed, shifted, and then enlarged to three times her average size. Her usually lithe arms bulged with muscle, and her taloned fingers cut rivulets through the bricks as she tore forward toward the waiting guards. Her body rippled with rage, and I spied her spine through the thick fabric of her shirt. This was the power of feral mind, and it was my first time witnessing it. Maddie tore through the broken gate and immediately launched herself into the air. She spun for a second with her hands held out stiffly on her sides and then landed right in front of the guards. I wasn't sure what happened next because all I could see was an explosion of blood from the guards' bodies. Gore and pieces of flesh flew through the air, and then Maddie moved on to her next victim. It seemed the wild desperado could take on all of the guards outside of the manor by herself, since Matilda and the other three had barely lifted a hand to help. I settled my sights on the manor's massive entrance and slammed the levers down one notch. My slithering digger rippled toward it without a moment's hesitation, and when we reached it, my machine broke through the wood, metal, and granite as if it was crudely made out of sand. The inside of the Marchioness's home reminded me of any other we'd been to. It was elaborately decorated in golds, whites, and grays, and a stunning chandelier hung above the sweeping twin staircases. Without missing a beat, I slammed the levers back into position, grabbed my staff from down at my feet, and then headed straight for the hatch. When I opened it, all of my women except Edenie, Ryan, and Olette hurried to my side, and we searched the room for any signs of the Marchioness. She had to be in here somewhere. And from the commotion I'd just created, she'd probably appear soon. Just as I suspected, my eyes snapped to the staircase to the left as the sound of heels clicking against the marble reached our ears. A tall, lanky woman appeared around the corner and stared down at us with disinterest. Her head was completely hairless, except for a slight fuzz. Her eyes were slightly tilted and neon green like that of a snake's. In fact, her whole appearance and movements reminded me of a serpent's. Her features were sharp and pointed at strange angles, and as she came down the stairs, she seemed to glide instead of walk.
"I certainly didn't expect any visitors today,"
the Marchioness growled.
"But you don't seem to be here for tea or biscuits."
My women already knew the plan. I needed to get as close to the Marchioness as I could so I could use the staff to take away her abilities. But there was one problem. Unlike the other Marchionesses we'd attacked, we knew nothing about this woman, not even her name, let alone what her ability was. So we had no other choice than to draw her power out before we made a move. The Marchioness stepped down the stairs gracefully, and before she could even breathe another word, my women spread out around me. I didn't breathe a word as Cecilia slipped behind her sisters and then disappeared through a portal. Seconds later, she appeared behind the Marchioness and slammed her shoulder into the woman's back. The noble stumbled forward with her hands held out in front of her, and then Cleia jumped out. The Nyx woman pushed both her hands in front of her, and a flurry of icicles flew through the air toward the Marchioness. The aristocrat barely had time to dodge them, but managed to escape all but one. The frozen projectile buried itself into her shoulder just as I took my first step forward with the staff held tightly in both hands. The Marchioness stared down at the icicle with a disdainful look, as if it were more of an annoyance than an injury. The bald woman scoffed, gripped the frozen projectile in her hands, and ripped it out with an irritated tisk. Scarlet blood flowed down her front as Daisy and Valerie snuck in from the sides with their hands raised and ready to attack.
"You can't hurt me like that, you stupid man!
The Marchioness snarled and let the projectile drop to the marble floor.
Many have tried and failed.
The icicle exploded into tiny shards before it started to melt and flowed back toward the Nyx woman. But that's not what caught my attention. One second there was a jagged hole in the Marchioness's shoulder where the projectile had entered, and then it was gone with a strange sucking sound. The blood stopped flowing instantly, and the flesh looked as if it hadn't been damaged at all. Regeneration, I barked. Her power is regeneration.
Oh,
Daisy chuckled darkly.
This is going to be fun. I'm sure if Ryan knew about this before we got here, she would have wanted to come along with us. Who doesn't love a punching bag that heals itself?
Without a moment's hesitation, Daisy and Valerie raced forward, and then the feline woman used her ability to phase both of them from view. I could barely make out the shapes of them as Daisy dropped to a knee, knit her fingers together, and then launched the cat girl into the air. Valerie flipped over the Marchioness's shoulders, gripped her by the arms, and held her in place. The bear girl immediately came back into view in front of the noble and brought her arm back.
You're going to want to move out of the way, Val,
the brunette shouted, and then punched her curled fist forward. The cat girl dropped her arms and knees right as the blow hit the Marchioness in the chest and blew her backward up the stairs. The aristocrat landed in a heap of limbs and then groaned feebly, but we weren't finished with her yet. Right as the Marchioness began to stand, a strange film appeared in front of her that I vaguely recognized from our last battle with the Marchioness, Aliana. Valerie seemed to be standing in place, but her outline looked fuzzy, almost as if she were rapidly vibrating, but that's when I saw it. It wasn't just the edges of the feline woman's body that were blurry, but also the 2 feet on either side of her. Valerie was moving so quickly it created something almost like a mirage, and the Marchioness's snake-like eyes glazed over for a second.
Go, go, go!
Cleia screamed and pushed me forward, but I didn't need any prompting. My boot slammed into the marble as Cleia raced alongside me on a sheet of ice, and right as I began to climb the stairs, the wave of frozen water lifted too. I wanted to watch her graceful turn around the staircase, but I had to keep my eyes on the Marchioness as Valerie lulled her into a trance. Suddenly, the Marchioness's eyes sharpened, and before I could stop her, she curled in her legs and slammed them toward Valerie. Her heels connected with the feline woman's chest and threw her backward toward the bottom of the stairs. I stared down at the Marchioness and lifted the staff as the core shifted colors. My arms moved instinctively as I brought the pointed tip of the core down toward the Marchioness's chest.
I got you!
Daisy shouted over the ash blonde screams. But the noble's laughter drowned them out.
You think that's all I have?
The Marchioness hissed as her neon green eyes met mine and a strange sensation crept up my legs.
Do you really think I'd be in place, says the Marchioness, if my only power were regeneration? You must think the Queen is stupid, don't you? Well, I can tell you this. She planned for things such as this.
I didn't know what was happening, but I couldn't move. The sensation crept up from my legs and spread through my entire body until it reached my hands. I tried my best to keep hold of my staff, but I couldn't feel its weight in my hands anymore. I felt as if I were moving through thick molasses, almost like when we passed through one of Cecilia's portals. When I glanced down at my staff, I watched it slip from my fingers and start to fall toward the floor. The core was inches away from the Marchioness's chest and about to touch her, but she'd gotten me seconds too early. I tried to push through it and summon up the power of the staff, but it seemed her ability worked on the weapon, too. The bright colors swirling inside of the stone slowly flickered and then died out. My eyes flicked down to the Marchioness and she grinned up at me. Large, pointed teeth lined her jaw, and for half a second I imagined what it'd be like to be bitten by that mouth.
Charles!
A voice screamed.
Shadow! It's Tom!
I didn't hear the voice respond, nor could I see Irene. But I felt the power wash over me like a sour cloud filled with thunder. It crept up behind me, and I imagined all of the monsters from my nightmares as a child. It felt as if all of my fears were standing right behind me, and if I could turn around, I'd have to face them all. The Marchioness's snake-like eyes shifted from mine, stared down the stairs, and then widened in absolute horror. I couldn't see what was happening, but the woman before me gasped and gurgled something I couldn't quite understand.
It's all right if you're afraid,
Irene soothed from below, and I heard her take a step closer.
Shadow will heal you. Shadow will help you.
A soft whisper whistled in my ear, and I managed to swivel my eyes toward the stair I stood on. Something blackish purple slithered past my feet, and for a second I thought it really was a snake until three more appeared right behind it. Suddenly the hold over my body went limp, and I moved an inch forward to grasp the staff in my fist. I moved without even looking down and aimed the core at the middle of the Marchioness's chest. My eyes filled with the flashing colors of the core as it reacted to my movements, and I thrust it forward toward the Marchioness's chest. A deep purple tendril wrapped around the Marchioness's ankle and then suddenly retracted as my weapon neared the noble. For a second, her face looked different the moment the shadow touched, a little older maybe, but I couldn't be absolutely sure. Slowly, the bald woman lifted her head, and I half expected her expression to be heavy with defeat, but she glared up at me with even more determination. Two things happened in quick succession, and I barely had time to move. Right before the core connected with the Marchioness's chest, the floor beneath me cracked. The tip of the staff slammed into the woman, but it was too late, and the stair I stood on crumbled into dust. Before I started to fall into the chasm below, my eyes slammed up to the Marchioness, and hateful laughter bubbled up her throat. She hadn't realized I'd stolen her powers yet, but what did it matter? I was falling into an abyss she'd created. I felt weightless as I plummeted down into the black hole, and cracked marble fell alongside me. If I weren't careful, one of the jagged pieces could easily pierce into my chest and kill me. But even then, the fall would probably kill me before any of that happened.
"Charles!"
Cecilia screamed, and I lifted my head toward the sound. The floor above me, where I'd just been standing, was a giant craggy hole, and the stunning redhead peered down at me with the rest of her sisters. Without hesitation, the black drake woman launched herself into the air and then down into the chasm toward me.
"Cecilia!"
Valerie cried and raced to grab for her. "Cecilia, don't!" It was too late now. Cecilia plummeted down toward me with her hands in front of her and reached for me, but I was too far from her. The black drake woman pressed her lips into a firm line, glared down at me, and forced herself forward through the air with her thick tail whipping out behind her. I raised my arms toward her, but there was nothing we could do, even if we reached each other. The Marchioness's laughter rumbled above us, and I swiveled my eyes toward her blurry face in the distance.
"Charles!"
The redhead screamed and reached out for me desperately. "Cecilia!" I boomed. The drake woman's face was pulled down into a pained grimace, and her usually bright, wide eyes were nearly squinted shut. Her fiery red hair whipped out behind her, and I swore I spied tears rippling from the corners of her eyes. Her finger grazed against mine, and I finally took hold of her. The drake woman slammed into my chest, and instantly I wrapped my arms protectively around her. The air rushing past us was cold and damp, almost as if we were being sucked down into the pits of the earth. I slowly closed my eyes and pressed my lips to her smooth, soft forehead. If this was going to be the end, then I wanted to hold her close the last few seconds of our lives.
"Get the Marchioness!"
Valerie screamed from above.
"Charles stole her powers! What about Charles?"
Cleia sobbed.
"Cecilia has him,"
Daisy urged.
"They'll figure something out, I'm sure of it."
Their voices were distant, and the farther the two of us dropped, they were nothing more than whispers underneath the howling of the wind. I'd worked so hard to create my army and transform the aristocrats. Why did it have to end like this? No, it wouldn't. My women would continue my legacy. And even without me, they'd journey on to defeat the queen. My three children in Valerie, Daisy, and Ryan's wombs would be the next leaders of the new world. I just wished I could have been there to witness it all. Suddenly, the weightless feeling disappeared. The howling wind died, and I felt more in my body than I had in the last terrifying 20 seconds. My eyes were still tightly squeezed shut, and my arms wrapped around Cecilia ached from the tension. But for some reason, I didn't feel afraid anymore. I could tell through my eyelids that it was darker wherever we were, and I guessed the hole above us had closed up. But that wasn't possible. I'd taken away the Marchioness's ability, so there was no way she could have done such a thing. The air smelled different, too, like mold, mildew, and, strange enough, wet paper. I slowly opened my eyes and realized we weren't plummeting down into the chasm anymore. Our feet were firmly planted against worn, warped wood, and I slowly turned my head to examine where we'd somehow ended up. The building was extremely dark, even though I could make out the shapes of windows here and there. We stood directly in the middle of the large hall, and I let my arms drop from Cecilia's waist before I took a step forward. The room seemed eerily familiar, but it was so empty and desolate that I couldn't quite figure out what it had once been. As I moved closer to the windows, I realized they were boarded up from the outside. Even the front door was blocked, too.
"Where are we?"
I asked, and my voice echoed around the empty hall.
"How did we get here?"
When I glanced over at Cecilia, the Black Drake woman opened her eyes slowly, as if she were afraid to look. But once she did, her eyes widened in surprise. The ex-guard hung her head back and stared up at the tall ceiling above our heads.
"I don't know,"
Cecilia whispered, hugged her arms to her chest, and breathed in deeply.
"But at least we're out of the hall."
"How did you do that?" I asked. "Is it part of your portals? I didn't feel the portal like I usually do, but it could be a new ability."
"It wasn't a portal,"
the redhead shook her head.
"When I summon one, I have to think of a specific place, and I didn't do that. Look where we are, Charles. I've obviously never been here before, so how would I know how to portal us here?"
"True," I said, cupped my chin, and glanced around the room once more. "What else could it be, then? A new ability? Sometimes they can be developed randomly, but so soon after your first one came? Any other time when you open up a portal, we have to move through it, but this was different. It happened right after I grabbed you, right?"
"Yes,"
the Black Drake woman nodded.
"What do you think it could be?"
"Teleportation," I stated. "That has to be it. But how could you develop it so quickly? It generally takes a while for my monster women to develop their second abilities." The two of us stood in silence for a long time, and I pondered how this could have happened, until suddenly Cecilia cleared her throat. I lifted my eyes toward her, and a light pink blush crossed her cheeks.
"I have an idea,"
the redhead murmured.
"But it might be wrong."
"Go on, tell me."
"Do you think I could have developed another ability because I'm pregnant?"
the Black Drake woman asked. You're pregnant?" I stammered, raised my eyebrows, and stared at her.
"I think so."
Cecilia nodded and then giggled.
"I have all of the same symptoms Ryan, Valerie, and Daisy described. I started getting sick in the morning yesterday."
"Really?" I grunted and then shook my head in disbelief. It could be a possibility, and we'd have to do some testing once we get back to the caravan, but this could mean..."
"What, Charles?"
the redhead asked. "Valerie, Daisy, and Ryan all have abilities that haven't awakened yet," I murmured. "You're the first one to develop and show signs of them. Oh, Cecilia, come here." I opened my arms wide to the Black Drake woman, and she rushed forward. I enveloped the ex-guard in my arms, and she pressed her full body against mine. Her hair smelled sweet like honeysuckle, and her skin was so soft like velvet. Instinctively, my member flexed against the fabric of my trousers, and it pressed against the soft flesh of her shapely thigh. Her emerald-green eyes flicked up to mine, and I sensed the desire deep within their hues. The redhead gripped me by the front of my shirt and forced me down to her height. Our lips crashed together, and her soft, pink tongue wriggled its way into my mouth. My hands swept down her thin waist, over her rounded thighs, and then down to her perfectly shaped ass. The Drake woman's thick tail curled around my right leg and tugged my trousers down to the floor. I chuckled lightly at her desperation, let go of her, and tucked my fingertips into the waistband of my underwear. My member created a taut tent against the fabric, and Cecilia's eyes stayed glued to the moistened spot where I dribbled some pre-cum. When her gaze met mine, she licked her lips and dropped to the floor in front of me. The redhead's deft hands tugged down the fabric of my underwear, and my erect penis sprung out.
I love your manhood."
Cecilia stared at my awakened shaft for a moment, and then she leaned forward with her waiting mouth agape. She licked at the head slowly, and I groaned as my eyes rolled back in their sockets. The more she teased me, the more I needed to be inside of her warm, receiving mouth. When I couldn't take it anymore, I plunged my hand into her fiery red hair and forced her down on my penis. The Black Drake woman gasped and tensed, but as soon as I was wholly inside her, she relaxed with a soft moan. Cecilia bobbed on my penis slowly at first, but quickened the pace, and the sensation ripped through my entire body like tidal waves. I thrust into her mouth as I held her head in place, and desperate moans escaped the Drake woman. I was so close. But I couldn't come now. I hadn't pleasured the redhead yet, and I prided myself on making my women reach orgasm before I did. In one swift movement, I pulled away from the redhead, pressed a hand to her shoulder, and forced her down to the warped wooden floor.
"Charles!"
Cecilia gasped, wriggled free of her clothes, and then laid naked beneath me.
"Please, I need it."
"Of course, my darling," I chuckled, held my erect member in my hand, and guided it toward her pulsing rosebud. I pressed the head of my penis against her slick entrance, and immediately the redhead's emerald eyes bulged. Soft moans escaped from in between her tightly closed lips, and as I pressed harder, the black Drake woman threw back her head and whined as I began to penetrate her eager body. Egged on by her noises, I slammed into her and groaned at her tightness. My body moved on top of her, and with every thrust, the ex-guard's moans heightened into screams of ecstasy. As I slammed in and out of her, Cecilia's hands wrapped around my neck and pulled me down toward her. Our bare bodies moved in absolute tandem as I worked my hardest to push her closer to orgasm.
"Charles! Yes! Yes! Oh, you feel so good! Oh, science, yes!" "Oh,
you feel so good and tight around me! Oh, yes!" I pounded into her faster than ever, and in one swift movement I flipped her legs over my shoulders. The empty room was filled with the sounds of our lovemaking, and it almost sounded like a symphony to me as it echoed back to me. Cecilia's taloned fingernails dug into my forearms, and as her entire body tensed against me, she dragged them down on the sensitive flesh. Red marks streaked down my skin, but I barely noticed them as I stared down at the stunning monster woman below me. Every time I slammed into her, her enormous breasts bounced, and I reached out with my right hand to pinch the hardened pink nipple of one.
"Yes! Charles! Oh, Charles, yes!"
The black Drake woman's tunnel tightened around me like a vice grip, and my eyes watered as the sensation forced me over the edge. This had never happened before, and it felt as if Cecilia's womanhood was making me come along with her. The more the monster woman moved on my member, the more intense the sensation grew, and I couldn't hold it back anymore. Right as Cecilia launched into a howling orgasm, my penis spasmed inside her walls, and then I blasted my frothy semen deep into the caverns of her pulsing womb.
"Yes, Charles! Oh, give me your seed! I need to feel it in me!"
"Oh, fuck!" I roared, threw back my head, and gasped toward the dim ceiling. "Oh, Cecilia!" The black Drake woman's hips pumped desperately as she forced the liquid into her body. Obscenities fell from my lips, and my hands slammed down onto her shapely hips as I guided her into the rhythm of my body. My hips slowed as I poured all of my seed in her, and when I finally finished, I slumped forward. My hands slammed down on either side of her head, and the black Drake woman stared up at me while she panted. Her face shined from the tiny droplets of sweat that beaded on her temples, and when her gaze met mine, the redhead grinned up at me.
"That was unexpected,"
Cecilia murmured. "Everything that just happened was unexpected," I chuckled, pulled away, and then helped her to her feet.
"Oh, what do we do now? We just left the others to deal with the Marchioness. I hope they're all right."
"Well, I stole the Marchioness's powers right before I fell through the hole. I'm sure they managed to capture her. They're all pretty powerful on their own. So I'm sure they've already taken her down to the caravan by now."
"I still want to know where we are,"
Cecilia said, carefully redressed, and then glanced around the dim room.
"It looks like it used to be like a dance hall or something, but those look like shelves over there, so it can't be that."
"It's the library," I grunted. "Matilda said it would be here, but Esmeralda told me it'd be empty. Those shelves used to be here out in the open." I opened the wooden floor where darker spots showed where the shelves had rested, and the lighter areas indicated where people's shoes had worn the stain off. "I knew we'd find this," I breathed. "But I'm pretty disappointed to find out it's true. I need to know more about my situation and why the Queen had Esmeralda follow me for so long."
"We'll find more information in Magneta. I know for a fact that's where they sent all of the books and archives to."
"We should probably head back to your sister's," I chuckled, turned, and offered the redhead my hand. "They're probably worried sick, or they think we're dead."
"You're right."
The black Drake woman nodded, took my hand, and then the two of us headed toward the front door. Since it was boarded up from the outside, it took a lot of work and a few hard kicks to finally get it open. I would have asked the Drake woman to portal us out, but the two of us had no idea where we were. Once we were finally outside, I took in all of Tolna laid out before me. From inside the digger, I hadn't gotten to see a lot of the city, but out here in the open it was beautiful. Just as Matilda said, the canal cut through the middle, and I could make out tiny little homes bordering the crystal-clear water. When I turned, I spied the enormous manor in the distance and the giant hole the digger had created in front of it. As I gazed down at the streets, I could make out the shapes of my soldiers as they patrolled and searched for more aristocrats. It seemed by now the battle was already over, and Tolna was ours. This was the fourth city we'd taken, and within a few weeks, we'd have a few more before we moved on to the capital. Suddenly, a familiar voice echoed through the confines of my brain, and I jolted forward, surprised at its suddenness.
"Charles?"
Josephine's voice called.
"Charles, are you there? Oh, please, for the love of science."
"I'm here," I answered. "Cecilia teleported us out of the hole, and we're safe."
"Thank the heavens,"
the Drake woman cried.
"They're all right. Cecilia managed to save them."
"Where are you, my love? We'll come to you."
"Well, we're by the canal,"
the heiress explained.
"But that's not what's important. Matilda said the scientist is here, but I can't see her. It makes absolutely no sense, but I guess we have to trust her."
"We're on our way," I barked, grabbed Cecilia by the wrist, and then hauled her down the street. I kept my eyes glued to the canal in the distance and raced toward it. We were so close to finally finding the scientist, and after so much waiting, I could finally meet her. Cecilia followed after me and panted for air, but we couldn't stop now. As the canal neared us in the distance, my heart hammered in my chest. I couldn't wait to finally meet her, but there was so much doubt in my head from what Josephine told us. Suddenly, the whole street opened up into nothing but a massive expanse of crystal blue water. The road dropped down a little bit, and a staircase led down to a small brick path along the water. I'd imagined large boats moving to and fro on the water, but there were none in sight except for a few tied off to a wooden pier below. I hadn't realized from my short time in the streets, but Tolna was massive. The city seemed to stretch on for miles, and more smoke lifted into the air everywhere I looked. We had enough men and monster women by now that it'd be easy to take over this city, but its sheer magnitude baffled me. I'd never thought we could take on a city this large, and yet we had. How big would the capital be if Tolna was this large? Finally, the two of us made it to the canal, and we hurried across the curved bridge toward the stairs I'd seen seconds before. All of my beautiful women waited at the bottom of the stairs for us, and finally I let my hand slip from Cecilia's grip. I thumped down the stairs and grinned.
"Charles!"
Valerie gasped.
"Oh, there you are,"
Daisy sighed. "There's no time," I forced out. "Matilda, take me to her."
"All right, all right,"
the green-haired woman laughed.
"I'll do it. Settle your horses."
The two of us hurried down the cobblestone path toward the pier, but there were no boats in sight. Not just boats, but there were no signs of the scientist anywhere. "Where is she?" I asked.
"She's coming, stud,"
Matilda soothed.
"You'll get to meet her. I promise. You won. Just relax now."
"No, I won't settle myself down, Matilda. I'm not angry or upset if it seems that way. I'm just amazed we could do all of this. So much has happened over the last few hours, and I don't think I've begun to process it. When I started, it was just me, Valerie, Daisy, Ryan, and Cleia, along with Edeni, but that was before I transformed her. Then Edeni gave me her army, but there were only 100 or so of them even there. We slowly worked our way up and collected more and more soldiers until we reached our size now. It almost feels like a dream, or that I imagined it."
"You're certainly not imagining it."
The green-eyed beauty smiled and gave my hand a light squeeze.
"I never thought a day like today would come. Hell, I thought I would be out in the desert, stealing from aristocrats for the rest of my life. But when I met you and your women, you gave my life meaning. I promised I'd never repeat myself again. But it seems I can't keep that type of promise around you, Charles. You're a wonderful man, and I'm glad you can call me one of your women."
"I'm glad too, Matilda." I smiled tenderly and then shifted my gaze back down toward the crystal-clear water below us. "You really are something else."
"Well, I will admit that at first, I thought you were just nervous about meeting the scientists for the first time.
The desperado chuckled lightly.
I mean, it's certainly exciting. I may not be the most intelligent woman, but I can imagine your delight right now. You're about to meet someone who's just as smart as you are. And let me tell you, the scientist is pretty darn smart, if you ask me.
But it doesn't look as if anyone is here, I uttered, and gestured toward the water below. My eyes flicked back to the group of women who'd quietly followed behind us, and some of them gave me nervous but excited smiles. We were so close to meeting the scientist, but there was no sign of her anywhere. Was Matilda pulling a joke on us, or was the scientist really here?
Yeah,
the green-haired beauty nodded.
She is.
My eyes widened, and I glanced between the desperado and the calm canal. There was no sign of the scientist, her submersible, or even the robot that the desperados had mentioned a few times before. How do you know she's here? I asked.
Follow me.
Matilda chuckled lightly and pulled me down the stone stairs.
I'll show you.
The desperado glanced around before she strode toward the edge of the small pier. All of the boats out here were small and empty, except for stray nets, fishing gear, or oars. The green-haired woman knelt, dipped her hands into the water, and then laughed. I furrowed my eyebrows and tried to process what was so funny, but before I could ask, Matilda stood and knocked the heel of her boot against the dock's thick posts 3 times. The green-haired desperado crossed her arms over her chest, leaned back, and then waited. Suddenly, the water in front of us roiled and fizzed furiously as something rose from the deep. Big white bubbles rose to the surface and then popped as they flowed away from the mass's center. Slowly, something under the surface started to take shape, and I stepped closer with squinted eyes for a better look. For a second, I thought it was a whale coming to the surface because of the round, blue shape. But this was far too big to be a whale stuck in the canal. Out of nowhere, a cylindrical metal probe popped out of the water and swiveled around for a second before it landed on us. It took me a moment to realize it was a periscope, and when Matilda caught sight of it, she waved enthusiastically.
Holy shit!
Ryan shouted from behind us.
What is that thing? Is that the submarine Matilda told us about?
Cleia asked. The whole submersible appeared out of the water, and I drank all of it in. The entire submersible vehicle was crafted out of thick blue metal, with rivulets every few feet. Portholes spanned the sides, and at the top, a small round area protruded from the rest of the metal where the scientist could stand and use the periscope. But the part that surprised me the most was the back where the propeller was supposed to be. Instead of continuing the rounded shape of the usual submarine, it was shaped like a block, almost like that of a fishing boat, and small openings went along the edges of it to allow the water to flow out of it. A metal door led out onto the deck, and another porthole looked out of it. Without warning, a long metal plank stretched out from the side of the deck, and I stared down at it for a long time. The metal was slick with water and the tiniest amount of algae. I lifted my eyes back toward all of the portholes that lined the sides of the submersible, and I could barely make out the shape of someone moving inside.
What are you doing?
Matilda asked, bumped my shoulder with hers, and then gave me a little push.
I thought you were anxious to meet her.
I took the first step tentatively, and then the second a little more confidently. My boots squelched against the wet metal, but the sound seemed far away and muffled. I kept my eyes glued to the small round door at the side of the submersible and headed for it with my hands curled into fists. Once I reached it, I stood in front of it nervously and peered through the frosted glass. I couldn't make out anything inside except for a shadow here and there.
Go on,
the desperado urged.
Do it!
I lifted my right hand and knocked decisively against the moist surface of the door, and the sound echoed metallically in the distance. The soft sound of shuffling feet reached my ears, and I felt my heart pounding in my chest. I wasn't sure why I was reacting this way, maybe because I respected and admired the scientist from the things we'd heard about her, or perhaps because she could help me find a way to craft AB a body. Hello? I called, and then stepped back as the door thunked and whirred mysteriously. It opened, and I blinked rapidly down at the petite redhead in front of me for a long moment. She rubbed at her eyes in the bright sunlight and then adjusted the glasses on her nose before grinning up at me.
Sorry, the shop's closed today?
A heavily accented feminine voice told me.
Seems something exciting is happening in the city currently.
but if you come back tomorrow, I might have something.
Then the woman blinked at me, and her mouth hung open.
Wait, you aren't just an average male. Are you Charles?
End of Book 8.